Live from Music Row in Nashville, this is Roy Mathock Jr.'s Money and Business Hour.
Roy Mathock here, and we are going to be talking money and business as we do every week. And today's going to be a great show. It's going to be about what do you do to prepare and what should you look for if you're going to meet with a financial advisor? Why should you do it to begin with? And then what are some of the things you got to look for, how you can check them out? All those kind of things that, you know, you got your money out there. You want to make sure that when you're with somebody that you're with someone that's qualified to do what they should be doing and that they're legit and you're not going to get yourself in a bad place, things like that. And then also we'll explain the difference between, you know, someone that is a financial advisor and someone that has, you know, specific licenses that don't really qualify to do that kind of thing. But I always start out with things that I think are important when it comes to moving forward financially, because the goal of this show is to help you get further along financially. And in doing that, it's always two things you have to control. The first one is, you know, just might not be making enough money. And so if you're out there and you're, you know, making, you're not making a lot of money. And what I mean by that is today's world, you know, if you really want to get ahead, the goal, you know, and you don't have to do this, but I always tell people go become a 2%er. And you can pretty well become a 2%er if you find something that you like and then apply your knowledge base to it throughout your lifetime. And, you know, I think this, you can become an expert in anything you do. It takes, you know, 5 or 10 years to get really good at something. And then once you get really good, then you continue working on it. And then before you know it, you're really great at what you're doing. And the key element to anything you do that involves getting paid is you solve problems. The more problems you solve for people, the more money you make. And so what you want to be thinking about is, what can I do to get my income up, find something I like? You know, the worst thing you could ever do is wake up every Monday morning hating your job, because generally speaking, if you hate your job, you're not going to put anything extra into it. And if you don't put anything extra into anything, it's going to be very difficult for you to get paid a lot of money. So most of the time, if you hate your job, you probably hate your pay. And if you hate your job and you hate your pay, you don't want to do that your whole life. And so go find something. Start looking around. Find something you like. It could be many different things that you like. Become really good at it. Turn it into a business and develop multiple streams of income. To kind of give you an idea right now, and I read this article, it says, what do you got to do to be in the top 1% of income earners? Well, there's all different levels, but to give you an example, if you make $80,000 a year, $81,000 a year in India, you're one of the top 1%ers. In the United States, you need to make $478,000 to be in the top 1%. And if you want to be United Arab Emirates, whatever, I think that's how they said, $891,000 in order to do that. Now, tax rates in the United States, just because you make a lot of money doesn't mean that you don't pay a bunch of taxes. Average tax rate for the 1%er is about 35%. And if you go out all the way over into France, it's up as high as 50%. Interesting enough, in that same country that has the highest income, they have the least taxes. And so what happens is you got to manage your income. I read another article by a guy. He wrote a book, and if you want to get a great book, it's a guy named Steve Siebold, S-I-E-B-O-L-D, and it's 177 Mental Toughness Secrets of the World Class. This guy took 20 years and went out and studied those people. And some of the things that he came up with, which I got this book many, many years ago, he came up with a lot of things by interviewing these people that were self-made, kind of like Think and Grow Rich did, you know, Napoleon Hill, another great book that you can read if you're really wanting to get your finances straight. Now, the reason we get our finances straight is because what we want to do, we want to be in a position to where we have some gap between our income and our outgo. So some of the things that people that are highly successful do that's different than those that aren't. The first one is they never think small. Okay. Their goal is not to retire at 65. They're always thinking about something big. The average person has everything they need to make more money than they can spend. So start thinking like the rich do. If you want to make more money than you can spend. So putting too much emphasis on savings. You know, I think that's kind of interesting. You know, if you focus your attention on earning and you focus that, and then you get your basic foundation in place when it comes to, controlling the way what you do with your money, you create a gap, and that gap is the thing that allows you to save money. That's the stress factor, the quality of life. And so what you do, you got to work on and focus on making money, figuring out how you can improve your income. So how can you do that? Well, you can go out and you can, you know, get more education on the subject matter. I always tell people to go deep, not wide, meaning get really good at a few things, not semi-good at a lot of things. Get really good at a few things. Make sure the things that you're doing has a payoff. Always, if you're looking for a job and somebody if you're looking for a job in sales, as an example, I always want to know what the number one guy makes in your company. How much does that person, okay, make? And then you got to go in there and say, well, that's I may not be number one, but I'm going to be up there. But what's the number one guy make? And if the number one guy is not making a lot of money, then why do you expect that this is going to be a good opportunity if you're trying to raise your income? So you want to find out what the number one person actually made and then determine your opportunity like that. Other things, you know, buying things you can't afford. You know, middle class focuses on buying things. The rich and the upper class focus on their investments and their savings and their income streams. They focus on that. Yes, they like nice things, but they live in a way and below their means in the way they go about doing it. They never end up spending that way because what happens is they've focused and they got their income. Everything is about recurring income stream. So anyway, so that's the first part that you want to think about. Then what we're going to do throughout the show today is we're going to get into the game plan to get you financially independent. And if you were going to meet with an investment advisor, what should you look for in finding that investment advisor? So we start out, the first thing is we got to have a goal. You know, goals motivate you. Financial independence number. Here's your number. If you want a financial independence number, here's what the first thing you got to do is take the desired income that you would like to have so you could quit. In other words, if I'm going to quit right now and I'm done, I'm not going to do anything else, how much money do I need? Start thinking about that. How much money do I need in order to quit? That's a financial independence number. I don't mean how much cash. I mean how much money per year that you need in order to live on. And then what we're going to do when we come back, we're going to calculate a plan to get you on track to do that. This is Roy Matlock Jr. We'll be right back. Roy Matlock Jr. back, and today's show we're going to talk about how to pick an investment advisor and, you know, what kind of qualifications, what happens when you meet with someone, what should happen when you meet with someone. And, you know, it starts out, we have to have a goal, you know, and the goal in my mind has always been what is the number? What's that financial independence number? Not the wealthy number, the financial independence number. I know back in my early 30s, I was looking at it. I said, what's the number that I would need in order to quit, you know, and know that I'm set for life? And back then, you know, this was back in the 80s, I thought, well, if I was making $40,000 a year or do-nothing money, and do-nothing money is the money that you know is going to come in from now on, it's going to keep up with inflation, what would I need? So at that time, I thought if I had $40,000 a year, this is 30 years ago almost, almost 30 years ago, if I had $40,000 a year, I could quit and then live on that life. Now, that's not the lifestyle I wanted to ultimately be at, but that was the lifestyle that would allow me to have a house, a car, eat out, go on a few vacations back then, and that kind of thing. It wasn't a wealthy goal. It wasn't a financial independence goal where I could play golf all over the world like I do now, or you know, do things like that. No, not that. This was just a goal. So how do you multiply these? Well, you take 40,000, multiply it times 20. So I would have needed $800,000 in savings. That 800 at 5%, that's a typical what I tell people, would pay $40,000 a year. So if you were to put have 800 set aside, now we got to do it. We got to figure out, you know, how are we going to get the 800? We can save it, and then we can also build income streams that will allow that to happen. And so now what we've got is a plan, okay, to get started. So what we want is a live or die plan that'll make us financially independent. Not a wealthy plan. This is a FIN number. Your financial independence number is 20 times your desired income. If you quit today, right now you say, well, you know, I want $100,000 a year right now. Well, you need $2 million. And if you had $2 million saved, you could do that. Now, another thing you could do is go out and build a business. And my experience has been you can build an ongoing income stream through business ownership much quicker than you can accumulate $2 million. So you're always working on getting better. You know, people, you know, go out there and they, I think about these athletes and they, Mike Trout just signed, I think, $300 million, okay, of, you know, baseball contract. And, you know, a lot of these guys like that. How do they, I mean, this guy's 25 years old. How long would he have to save to do that? Well, what he did, he honed his skills. He became great at what he does. And I've met the guy before, and the guy is, I mean, he's the real deal. He goes out there and he all the time, okay, is on it, and he became great at what he's doing, and so therefore he made millions of dollars. So now maybe you're not going to be a professional athlete, but you can be a professional business owner and do the same thing. So if you have a question, we're going to start the show 615-737-9522, or you can email me roy@roymatlockjr.com. Also, I've got budget forms and how many works for kids, how many works downloads on roymatlockjr.com. Also, you can tune in. I've got, I think, 20 podcasts up there now that goes all throughout. I had a show just a couple weeks ago called How to Be a 2%er, which had a lot of comments on that. So now we're going to go and try to find us someone to work with. And so what's the first thing we got to do? I would go to Broker Check to begin with. Broker Check. And if you go into Broker Check, it's going to tell you what these people are about. You know, for instance, if you wanted to go in and check out Roy Matlock Jr., go to Broker Check and put Roy Matlock in there and put the city, Nashville, and it would bring up all of the licensing, all of the states, all of any problems that might have, disclosures, anything that there is would be brought right up. So you can go to Broker Check and kind of check them out. Now, don't be confused that a life insurance agent is a financial advisor. No, they're a life insurance agent. Many of these insurance guys believe that somehow or another, if they sell a whole life a whole life insurance policy, that's some type of financial planning. No, they're an insurance agent. Now, most of your advisors are going to have their insurance license. And the reason is that life insurance, term life insurance for sure, is something that you should consider, especially if you have liabilities. And we'll talk more about that. But we're an investment advisor. They go through and they have to do continuing ed. They have a securities license. They may be what's called an RIA, where they're a registered investment advisor. All of those numbers, 6, 63, 65, 26, all these things add up to training that they've gone through state exams, all right, and or federal exams, allowing them to do business. And so you want to look at what's going on, make sure that they don't have any problems, all right, that they've been involved with. You know, I saw some things where, you know, a broker made millions of dollars churning accounts. Churning is where they go in there and they just sell things for the sake of selling it. So then once you do that, you check them out, then you need to find out how they charge. Now, very few financial advisors are true what we call fee paid. And what fee paid would be you walk in and you say, I'm going to pay you $500 for 2 hours of your time and you advise me. All right, that would be what is really a fee-paid advisor. There's two other ways advisors get paid. One is commission-based, and the other one is a ongoing management fee. So let's talk about how that works. So if you sit down with someone and they are a financial advisor, they're going to have a couple of different things going on. One, they have a license where they can do brokerage accounts. A brokerage account would be you come to me and you say, I want to buy XYZ mutual fund. Now, keep in mind, you'll get advice as to choosing. You'll sit down and say, what do you think I should do? And we do a look at your, you know, top risk tolerance and all the different things. And I say, here's a fund group I might would go with. And you choose that and you pay a brokerage fee. So I'm going to give you an example. A typical brokerage fee, if you go into an account, let's say at $100,000, and you put it into a brokerage account, it might be 3.5% up front, and then it might be 1% ongoing management fee. And that would be, and if you never leave that fund family, you can stay within that one fund group, and you will end up having a pretty low-cost investment account, because that if you leave that in there for 10, 20 years, guess what? You paid 3.5% to get it going. Now, if you change and decide, hey, I want to move it, and I want to move it from XYZ company to ABC mutual fund company, you're going to have to pay again. So if you start moving it, and that's why, you know, if you get in a brokerage account, in my case, I don't move people. You know, the reason I try to put them in good diversified places to start with. But the fact of the matter is that you every time you move it, you pay a fee. Now, the other way you can do business with a financial advisor is what's called a managed account. Now, the difference with the managed account and the brokerage account is the brokerage account, you pay the fee up front, and then you pay a lower expense over a long period of time. All right, if you go into a managed account, you don't pay a fee up front, and you have access to multiple accounts. You could be in, you know, four different, you know, companies, management companies. You can have a lot of different things, ETFs, you know, all these different accounts, and you can move them from one to the other. If the manager's not doing well, you can fire that manager. It doesn't change anything, but you're going to pay on average about 2% to do that. And what that means is that you're going to pay the broker every quarter somewhere around 1%, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, depending on the size of your account. And then you're going to pay the underlying custodian fee and also whatever management cost that the manager charges. My experience has been it's going to run about 2%. Ballpark. And so over a long period of time, if you stay in a managed account, you get flexibility, but at the same time, you end up paying more money doing that. If you go in a brokerage account, you got less flexibility, you pay up front, and then what happens is you are able to, but you leave it in there and you have lower expenses. So expenses matter. I just read an article in Morningstar that basically said, you know, mutual fund expenses are at the lowest level they've been in years, so they're going down, but still, that's the way that works. And so what's better? Well, it really depends. It depends on you, your risk tolerance, everything about where you're at. And so the first thing you're going to do is find a broker or somebody or an advisor, and you're going to check them out, make sure they're legit. And what I mean by legit doesn't mean because that they're experienced, but at least you know they don't have any legal problems and they're properly licensed. You go to the broker check, and that will do that. That is a FINRA, which is the regulator's website, broker check is. So you go there, you check that out. Okay, then what happens is you schedule an appointment and you sit down with that person. Now, why do people use brokers compared to maybe doing it on their own? See, all of in any industry, you can do it on your own. I call it, that's why Home Depot is around, because you can go do it yourself. I mean, they coined that phrase. So you can go do it yourself. You can buy your own investments. As far as that goes, you can take care of your own health. We have a lot of people that say, you know, they're going to use vitamins and they're going to study and they're going to do all that kind of stuff, and they don't go to the doctor. But the point of it is the reason we go to professionals is to get advice on things that we're not quite as up to speed on. They spend their time, hey, I go to a doctor because I want to know what's wrong with me if I have a problem. You know, if I want to get my car worked on, I try to find somebody that I can trust, which is the same thing with this, but I'm not going to try to fix my car. Now, I could go online, YouTube it, you know, read some manuals, and I've probably go buy some tools. I could probably figure out how to fix my car, but I'm just not going to do that. If I want to sell my house, I get a realtor. If I want to move my home, I get a mover. And those companies, the reason that I pay them is because I have expectation levels that in the long run, it's going to save me time, and their expertise is going to be valuable. And at the end of the day, I'm going to end up better with a better quality of life. I'm very much one of those guys that I stick to the things I know how to do, and I delegate out to people that know what they know how to do, and I get that. I take martial arts lessons. I have a guy that, you know, Marine, you know, been doing it for 40 years. I trust him. He teaches me. I go get gun training. I go do the same thing. One of my advertisers, I do that, Agape Tactical, you know, and so I get gun training from experts, people that know what's going on. I don't try to figure it out on my own. And so that's why you would choose a financial advisor. So what you're going to do is you're going to make the assumption that you're going to do your research and make sure that the people you're dealing with are trustworthy, and that you like them, and that they, you know, they have a similar philosophy that you want to do. And then what they're going to do is they're going to spend their time educating you. That's the key to it. See, my belief is this: give me the education and I can do it. I'll never forget, I hired a guy to teach me how to use Microsoft Office. It was the most amazing 8-hour day I've ever taken from learning. So I was taught how to do it, and then once I learned how to do it, hey, that's cool, I'm good. So my name is Roy Matlock Jr. We're going to go through what an appointment would look like when we come back from the break when you meet with a financial advisor. All right, Roy Matlock Jr. here, and today's topic, we're talking money and business, which we do every week, and today we are talking about how to choose a financial advisor, and we talked about that before the break. Just a brief recap, you can go to BrokerCheck and check them out, and, you know, referrals are always good. You know, the majority of the business you're going to find that people do are in the that type of industry is through referrals, because they do a good job for someone. And I mean, it's real simple. They do a good job. They give them good service. They give them good, you know, returns on what they're trying to do based on what they're looking for. And they're happy to refer their friends because they everybody wants to have a good experience with a good product. I do the same thing. You know, I'm a big referral guy. I teach people about money, and then if I run into somebody and I find something that is like really good, I refer them, and then I get the same kind of thing. And so, but that's all reputational things that you have to do. So what we're going to do is now we're going to make the assumption that you've decided to meet with someone. And the first thing you need to realize is the only way they can help you with your money is they have to know what you have. And so when I sit down with someone, I always advise them to begin with to bring in some of their financials. And the first thing we do is we do a balance sheet. We kind of take a look at all the different things. And so if I were interviewing someone, the first thing I would do is I would talk to them and I'd say, so with where we're at right now, the first thing I need to do is gather some information from you. Do you own your home? And they say yes. And I said, well, if you sold your house today, what would you sell it for? And they say, well, it's probably worth about $350,000. Okay, good. Now, do you have a mortgage on the house? And they say yes. So, well, how much do you owe approximately? Well, I owe $180,000. Do you know what kind of interest rates you have on your home? And you come back and you say, well, I've got a 4.25% loan. Okay. And I sit there and I try to decide if it makes decent sense to do a refi, depending on what the current market rates are. Now, how about emergency money? Do you have any emergency money, like bank savings, anything like that? And they come back and they tell me, well, I've got $10,000 set in bank savings. All right. Do you have any CDs or anything like that? In other words, longer-term things rather than just a bank savings account. No, they don't have that. All right, great. Now, are you currently covered under a retirement plan through your work? And they say, yes, I have a 401k. About what do you have in that? Oh, I have $120,000 in it. All right, good. So you got $120,000. And then I look at the spouse. Do you have one? Yeah, I'm a teacher. I got a retirement plan, like a 403B. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, okay. I got about $90,000 in there. Okay. Do you have any accounts that you might have been at another job that are still sitting there, anything like that? And they say, yeah, I've got an old for my other company. I got that. And they come out, I got $20,000 in an old 401K. All right, great. Any other investments, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, anything like that are just regular accounts? No, don't have anything like that. Any rental property? Okay. You say, well, I got one rental house. It's worth, how much have you sold it today? $220,000. And does it have any debt on it? Do you have a mortgage on it? Yeah, we owe about $60,000 on it. All right. And about how much income are you getting off of it? And they tell me that, and I go through. So, okay, now we're getting an idea. Now, how about debt? Anything outside of your mortgage? Do you have cars, credit cards, anything like that? And they come back like that. Anything else I should know? Any inheritances on the way? Any other things? Now, let's talk about the insurance side. Do you have life insurance? Yes. Do you know about what you have? Well, I've got a whole life policy. It's $100,000. I said, does it have any cash value in it? And they tell me it's got some cash value. Okay. And anything else that I should know about? And they're like, no, this is pretty much it. All right. Now, how much do you earn? You earn $60,000 a year, and you earn $40,000. The spouse, you guys earn about $100,000, and you have a couple kids. And how old are your kids? All right. They're 10 and 8. All right. Got that. All right. So now what's happened is, in a short period of time, I have been able to get an idea of where they're at financially. And you're how old? You're 42 and 38. All right. So then what we're going to do, now that we do that, now if I'm looking through here and I'm hearing all these numbers, some of the things that I'm going to do is I'm going to look at the statements and say, okay, let's take a look at your 401k statements. Let's take a look at the life insurance. Let's do all this kind of stuff. So, but to begin with, it's just like when I walk in the doctor says, well, what's going on? And so I got a sore throat. Really? How long you had it? Okay. Do you get these often? They ask me all these kind of questions. Well, what I'm going to do is do the same thing, and then I'm going to get an overall view of where people are. If this, you know, I were looking at this, and these people got, hey, they've done good with their life. All right, they're making $100,000. They clearly are smart with their money. All right, do you have any kind of working budget? And then if they say yes or no, and we've got a budget sheet, you can go to roymatlockjr.com right now and download our budget sheet, and it'll help you to learn how to set up spending plans to where you spend less than you make. So you go through this whole scenario. So this is what you should expect if you're meeting with someone as it relates to your money. The first thing they're going to do is they're going to get information. They're going to then make recommendations. They're not going to make recommendations without information. Let me give you the difference in that. If you walk in somewhere and they're trying to recommend something and they don't have the information, then they're salespeople. That's what they are. They're selling. So they got a product that they were told about, and now they're going to try to sell it to as many people as they can. That's not what you're looking for. You're looking for somebody that says, okay, where are we at? Then what I would end up doing in going through all this is I might decide that, hey, interest rates are lower. You might be able to get a mortgage refi. That'll free up some cash. We'll look at their insurance, life insurance, car insurance, all that stuff. So if they've got car insurance and homeowners insurance, I'm going to find out if they've got enough liability coverages, and then I'm going to refer that out to somebody that, you know, I'm not in that business, but I have resources. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to look at their health insurance and see what they have. They have it through work. That's one thing. If they have to buy it on their own, I'm going to figure that out. If they're at or near retirement, we might get into long-term care insurance, find out if they have that. Those are the things that I'm going to dig into. So I'm going to look at some of the things that, you know, can hurt people. We're going to address liabilities, address potential concerns. You know, I see a lot of things that come up that you just wouldn't even believe, the kind of stuff that disasters that are happening. Older people will be out there and they'll put their son or daughter on their accounts. And little do they know that if they have these joint accounts, then in essence, even though they're doing it in order to be able to give, you know, access to the account, they turn around and say, well, I'm going to put my daughter on my account. Well, if the daughter gets a divorce, half of that money can be tied up in the divorce. If the daughter has a car accident, gets sued, then they can come after that. And this is the parents. All the parents are trying to do is just make sure that if they were, you know, in poor health or something like that, they couldn't do anything. And so we then get into things like that. We talk about maybe the consideration of a trust, maybe a financial power of attorney, a healthcare power of attorney. So we get into all these different things that will allow for you to end up getting and accomplishing what you want to do. So if you're in a situation where the you know, you're trying to protect yourself, you want to have all the avenues there to do it. So for instance, you know, if I meet with somebody, I might consider, you know, a living trust because it avoids probate. And so I don't do this. But I have people that I know. And when you go and meet with someone, all right, you need to have someone that's got those contacts. You don't need to be going out searching for an attorney or an accountant. All right. You need to be able to walk in and say, look, do you do this? Yes, no. A lot of times you can just say, look, just call this person. I'll talk to him on the phone, give him your details and let you know what's going on. So now what's happening is you're at a point where now we can make some recommendations. So then I start going in. So how do you make recommendations? We're going to get into that. There's some things that you have to do. When you meet with a client, what I have to do is it's a law, I have to know my client. So the first thing in knowing the client is I got all of this information. All right, now I've got a clear picture as to what they should be doing. I also need to know some of the things their goals are. I need to know, you know, what their risk tolerance is. You know, in other words, if you were to lose money for a short period of time, are you okay with that? So if we get into something to where, you know, what is your risk tolerance? And there'll be questions that I might ask people. I'll give you some examples as when we come back about questions that I would ask whether or not people should be in a certain type of investment, that kind of thing. And so how do I go about doing this? Well, first thing I do is I'm trying to get in the mind of and the temperament of someone. If they come walking in my office and you've got a bunch of money in the bank, all right, and that tells me everything I need to know for the most part about your mindset on risk. So if you got a bunch of money in the bank, then what I'm going to do if I'm trying to move you out of there into something that's going to be more down your speed, I've got to be very careful, all right, in doing that. But if you show up with a bunch of stocks, individual stocks, then I got a different mindset. If you've got your home paid for, then I have another mindset. You know, I'm one of these guys that I don't recommend you pay your home off. I recommend that you put your money out doing something. But other people, they come in and they do that. So what we have to do is create a plan that goes along with your perspective on things, but at the same time, give good advice. You know, I go in and I look at 401k choices. I just can't even tell you how many times I meet with people where they have their 401k options completely wrong. And the reason they're wrong is because they don't have that information on how to make them right. I'll find people that are, you know, young and they've got all their money in a fixed account. Or I'll find somebody that's older and they got it all way too aggressive. I see all those kind of things. And so what a financial advisor can do is not only help you own the accounts that they currently control, but they can also help you on the accounts that they don't, like your 401k options and things like that. So we have one more segment. We'll be right back. My name is Roy Matlock Jr. Stay tuned. right. We're winding up here, and today's show has been about how to choose a financial advisor, as well as what should go on when you sit down with that person. If they are going to help you, they're going to find out first, you know, where you're at, what you're doing. And what you have to do is you have to cooperate. And cooperate means you have to give them that information. It's confidential. It's like going to the, you know, lawyer or doctor. It's the same kind of thing. We have rules on confidentiality to do things. And so, but you got to open up and tell them what's going on if you want to get some help. And so most of the time, what is interesting is, you know, the recommendations are very similar for someone in a similar scenario. Now, keep this in mind. You can have two people that are the same age, got the same income, and have everything, but there's different recommendations. And the reason is what I was talking about earlier. They're, you know, views on risk and where things are going. And so first thing we do is when we meet with someone, we gather the data to find out what they have. Then at that point, somewhere along the line, we're going to be able to make some recommendations based on, you know, all the different things that we find out. So let's talk about risk tolerance. All right. There's three things really that go into risk tolerance that really matter. And then there's other things that just from experience and things like that. But the first one is, you know, what is the time horizon? All right. In other words, is this money that you've got that maybe you're wanting to invest? Is it under 3 years, 3 to 10 years, over 10 years? So that's kind of a liquidity question. You know, if it's under 3 years, more than likely an investment is not a good choice. What you should be thinking about is that's just liquid cash. We're just going to do stuff like that. So, you know, short term, I don't get involved in short term things. You can get up every morning and go trade stocks short term. I hear all these guys on the radio telling how easy it is to trade stocks, okay, right before you lose all your money. But the point of it is that you can do that if you have, but from a standpoint, if you're wanting to move forward, what I would tell you is the first thing we got to do is we're going to say, okay, how long can you tie this money up? Now let's talk about what happens if the market goes the wrong way. All right. How comfortable would you feel if at the end of the year you had a 15 or 20% loss in your account? You know, I've given these numbers over and over and over again about what happens, you know, in the market. If you want to know the way the stock market works, all you got to do is look at it and say, well, it's average 10%, but in averaging 10%, what did it do along the way? Well, when it goes up, it goes up 19%. When it goes down, it loses 12%. That's, I think, about a 76 or 80-year history. So it makes a lot, loses a lot, but over a long period of time, it averages that. You make money about 75% of the time. If you put it in the beginning of the year, 25% of the time, you don't. Those are the numbers. But what is your risk tolerance? What if you come in and you just happen to come in right before 2008? You know, are you going to be able to live with that? If you can't, then what you need to do is you need to have a lower risk tolerance. Okay. So we want to, you know, take and put you into things just like that. And so we got time, we got market, we got liquidity that we need to find out, you know, what's going to happen on that. Okay. So now that we've done that, let's go into what's the next step. Well, then there's going to be product recommendations. All right. So when I meet with someone, you know, I'm going to make sure that they have a good defense in place and a good offense. I start, if you're young, I call it the PMA theory, PMA. And what that is you're going to protect, manage, and accumulate. So what we're going to do is we're going to protect against disasters. Okay, what's the biggest disaster that can happen to a family? The loss of a breadwinner. You know, if you're making 50 grand a year, here's what you're looking at. If you're 30 years old, if you never make any more money, never got a raise, and you assume you're going to work to 65, that's 50 times 35. That's about $1,750,000 of earnings that you're going to make if you don't get a raise, and we expect to get a raise. And so let's say the one's making 50, the other is making 40, and they've got 35 years left. They're both the same age. They're a young couple. They got a couple kids, maybe a mortgage, and they're making $90,000 a year. 90 times 30 years, 30, it would be $2,700,000 between the two of them. And I always ask a young couple, say, if something happened to either one of you, how much of that $2.7 million would you want to have? And they say all of it. And so first thing we do is we calculate what they need to do in order on an insurance standpoint, and I recommend they get term life insurance. And the cool thing is when they're young, they can lock it in for 20, 30, 35 years and lock it in the premium. So they go buy the life insurance they need. Then I recommend to them that they have something that allows them to have increasing life insurance to keep up with inflation and to keep up with their increased income. Now, if they have a big income increase, they should go back and say, look, how much of this new income what I want my family to have. And that's how you purchase that. If you're young, you protect, manage, and accumulate. Here, what do? We have a budget. We have an emergency fund, 3 to 6 months of expenses. We're going to put that together in maybe a money market or a bank account. We're going to take a look at the car insurance and the home insurance. We're going to make sure that you have adequate liability insurance. You don't have a party at your house, somebody falls, and then they sue you, or you have a wreck or something like that. So we're going to make sure we have that. So we're protecting. That's what we're doing. We're managing with a good cash flow plan, a good budget, that kind of thing. And then we're going to start accumulating money. How do we accumulate money? We put it into investments. We fully fund our retirement plans. We take and we put them into maybe college plans. And then if we want to do a 15-year mortgage, get our house paid off quicker, we can do that. So the bottom line is protect, manage, accumulate. And that's different once you get at or near retirement. It's all about protecting, because what we want to do is we want to, if we're in this stage where we're no longer in the accumulation stage, but we're in the preservation stage, meaning that the majority of the money that you're ever going to accumulate, you've already done it, and that's in your retirement accounts. First thing we want to do is we want to protect things. We'll protect in the event you go to a nursing home. So a nursing home is like a divorce. You have two households and one income. So you might look at getting long-term care insurance. We'll get into that another day, how it works. But the bottom line is you might consider that. You might look at if you're getting pensions, what kind of life insurance that you should have in order to be able to max out your pension, you know, that kind of thing. We want to protect against inflation. We got to have something in there that will allow our income to grow over time, so we can't be totally conservative to the point we have no growth opportunities. But at the same time, we don't want to go take a big step backwards. We need to protect against inflation. We protect against, you know, running out of money, living too long, okay, and our money runs out. We need to take a look at protecting against taxes. We don't want to have undue taxes due to the fact that, you know, the IRAs and the retirement plans, here's what we did. The IRS is saying, look, we don't want the money yet, but we do want it, and you're going to pay it. And so now the question is, how are you going to pay it? You know, you've been accumulating all this money tax deferred and pre-tax. How are you going to pay these taxes? Because we want it. We want those taxes. When do we pull Social Security out? How do we go about doing all this stuff? So what we end up doing is we have it, depending on the customer that's coming in or the client that's coming in, what happens is you sit down and you ask all these questions. All right. And once you ask all these questions, then the advisor has the ability to be able to make solid recommendations on things. Then you get into products. So what are the products that go into, retirement planning? Usually you've got mutual funds. You usually have possibly managed accounts. And in many cases, you have annuities. There's all types of annuities. You know, you've got fixed annuities where it's a fixed, you know, interest rate, basically an interest rate and guarantee of principal. All annuities have some benefits like tax deferred growth. So you have that. If I tell people, if you want annuities, you're buying insurance. What are you buying insurance on? Well, you could be buying insurance just like at the bank. We go to the bank, we have FDIC insurance. The reason we buy that, it's a principal's guarantee, but we pay for it. And we pay for it in the fact that we don't have big returns by doing things like that. And so what we end up doing is we buy insurance. We buy annuities. We buy fixed annuities. There's indexed annuities. There's shield annuities. There's all these different kind of variable annuities. But what they generally offer is either some form of principal guarantee or some form of lifetime income guarantees. And so what we end up doing, we say, well, those are products that might go into the system. Do I think, you know, when I hear these guys on the radio and advertising, you don't want to lose your money, all right? Or you're going to have a stock market loss and get wiped out, and they try to get you to put all their money. Most of those that are marketing that, they're not financial advisors. What they are is insurance agents selling annuities. That's what they're doing. They're selling annuities. Do annuities have a place in your retirement plan? Sure, you can take, and you know, if you take a portion of your money and you put it in and say, I got a lifetime guarantee on this of 5%, no matter what happens, that's worthwhile, but not all of your money, more than likely. That doesn't make a lot of sense. And so what we want to do is we want to have a diversified portfolio based on what our risk tolerance determines. So now once you've done that, once you've put together a plan, you've got protect, manage, and accumulate when you're young. Then if you're at or near retirement, you're going to just think about, okay, I'm not going backwards. I want to make sure this money lasts my lifetime, and then hopefully it lasts longer than my lifetime so I can turn around and hand that off to my kids and things like that. You're now working on a plan. Now, here's the stats, and you can look it up. If you work with a financial advisor, you end up with more money on average. Most people do. The higher the income level of people, the more likely they are to have a financial advisor. The reason they have a financial advisor is not because they have a higher income level. It's because they understand that to be great in what they're doing, they don't have the time to be great in everything else. And so I do that with everything I do. I try to pick out the best people who can help me do things. Well, I hope you enjoyed the show today. We're getting ready to wind it down. My name's Roy Matlock Jr. You can go to roymatlockjr.com, and you can reach me along with my advisors that we have working, and we help people with their money. Additionally, log in and sign up for the podcast, and you can also have a lot of good downloads because, you know, what I do, I try to educate. We do it every week. I want you to continue to tune in. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next week.